So.
Yep.
Weather's been.
Poopy. Weird.
Pressure drop.
It'll be 30 and then it'll be 70.
It's weird. I don't like it.
Yeah. It's awkward.
You watching the March Madness and all?
No. Go Spartans. Are they in it?
I don't know. Ball. Don't know. Sports ball.
Yep. I like your shirt, Camila.
Robert Morris is the only local. Oh. Yeah. They drew Alabama in the first round. What are you going to, you know, nothing can. Mr. Peabody and Sherman was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America. Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Yep.
Yep. I'm sure we'll come up with something to say.
I've got things to say.
Okay. All right. Let's get into it.
I feel like if I had left the TV off and thought about what a Mr. Peabody movie might be, I would have had about the same experience. Yep. I did. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. My name's Sean Collier. I'm here with two people on this spaceship who really, you know, just were trying to get the free college and they didn't sign up for all of this Klingon diplomacy. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Everything is free in the Federation.
I know, there's no money. should have set up something that Robin couldn't correct. Camila Adams.
Hello.
Star Trek VI was last time. We gave it a 61. So thus far on this show, Star Trek is way better than Star Wars. In that we've only done Solo, a Star Wars story.
Sort of.
Which we gave 46 and two-thirds.
Which was generous.
Attack of the Clones at 40 and two-thirds.
Oh, so. Yeah. We've had some
also
bad
generous.
Ones.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I kind of like that one. Go back and listen to the episode and hear me say, I kind of like this one.
I kind of like Solo. Solo is higher than it needs to be because I'm oddly kind to it.
Okay.
But yeah, until we draw Empire, Star Trek is our clear preference. This time, though, Mr. Peabody and Sherman, we said on the last show, I have affinity for this property from childhood. Mm-hmm. I think. If you had asked me, was there a Mr. Peabody and Sherman movie, I would have said no.
So, I think I would have gone, oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Clearly made no impression on me at the time, and now that I've seen it, it clearly made no impression on me. Camila?
Same, like the original series. If I remembering it correctly that they're part of the Bullwinkle?
Right, so it's like Garfield and Friends. You're too old for this reference. For people my age, there was a TV show called Garfield and Friends where there would be segments about Garfield, but then there would also be segments about these farm animals and friends.
So like Animaniacs.
Yes. Okay, there you go.
Peabody and Sherman are to Rocky and Bullwinkle as Pinky and the Brain are to Animaniacs.
Or that cute little boy that would come out of the house and be like, okay, so my friend Tommy.
Don't remember him.
Oh, God. That cracked me up. He was only like, you know, a minute.
Yeah. My favorite Animaniac segment was always Good Feathers.
Oh, yeah.
Even though, obviously, I had not seen Goodfellas as a child. I saw it when I was too young, but not that young. And, God, did I love that segment. I also love Katie Kaboom. And my dad would make a lot of jokes about how I was like Katie Kaboom. And then, like, you know, later on, I found out I was bipolar. And I was like, yep.
Yeah, I don't remember these that
well. Okay, you should go back and watch Animaniacs. Yeah. It rules.
I know I watched it as a child.
Don't go back and watch Garfield and Friends. It does not rule. And yet, as an elder millennial, I would totally go see an End Friends movie. Mm. Yeah.
End Friends.
There's one little chicken who's still wearing his shell.
But
His name is Sheldon, I'm pretty sure.
What I did do is watch 1.5, what were they actually called?
Mr. Peabody's Improbable History.
Peabody's Improbable History.
There you go. Nice. Yes.
Which, why didn't they just do that?
Well, they Marie Antoinette segment, even though I don't like it, they follow the rules of a Mr. Peabody segment.
Yeah.
They come close, but even that one, they're like, we got into some trouble here. The one that's the closest is the getting Da Vinci to paint the Mona Lisa one.
Yes.
You know, but the point is like, they go to history and the historical figure is kind of a goofball and has some silly problem, and then they solve it.
Right.
And then he makes a pun and we go home.
I thought it was more, I mean, you have watched these more than I have because I watched one,
okay.
which was the Napoleon one. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was more like they inadvertently cause the moment in history in the way that they did with Marie Antoinette by like having her say, let them eat cake when they ask for cake. And then that's overheard and it starts the French Revolution.
Maybe.
Okay. I don't, it doesn't actually matter.
I've heard it both ways.
But the point, the point is like, why can't they just have gotten lost in history and had to get home? It's, I mean, maybe this got better reviews than I thought it had, but like, first, it's about nothing. Then it's about trying to get Sherman acclimated to school and the bullying. Then it's briefly about trying to get Penny home. And then it's about the relationship between Peabody and Sherman. Then that is waved off for multiverse bullshit, which doubles back to the child protection subplot. Like,
let's go through the plot summary.
Yeah.
Because also, I'm worried about it.
Okay.
Tell me when to go.
Go.
Mr. Peabody is a dog that talks, wears glasses, invents time machines, and raises a human boy. They like to go back in time and cause famous moments in history like the French Revolution. At school, Sherman mansplains parables to mean girl Penny, who shames him for having a dog dad and bullies him until he bites her. Mr. Peabody invites Penny's parents over to dinner to smooth things over and avoid the wrath of Child Protective Services, but Sherman and Penny sneak into the Wayback Machine. She gets engaged to King Tut. They zoom out of there to avoid entombment, but the Wayback malfunctions, so they have to party with Da Vinci and get Mona Lisa to smile. Then it's off to the Trojan War, where Mr. Peabody plummets to his presumed death. Sherman breaks the Wayback rules, going to the start of the evening, but he also tears apart the fabric of space-time. Mr. Peabody bites the CPS lady, and a chase begins as it starts raining historical figures into the streets of New York. Then Mr. Peabody and Sherman travel to the future when the problem is already solved so they can figure out how they solved it. I think I don't really understand this part. Anyway, everybody goes back to their own time except for CPS lady, who gets kidnapped by and then marries Agamemnon.
Only like three seconds.
Okay,
more,
good. Over. When I first read my summary, it was like 95 seconds.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
I think they just traveled briefly to the future because that would make an opposite timey-wimey kaboom that canceled out the first one. I don't think they had to, like,
when they touched their counterparts and then said, we've resolved it, and somebody said, well, that makes sense, I was like, great, an ending.
Right, <yeah. laughs>
I was truly like, I am ready to accept this as the end of these shenanigans. But then they were like, nope, we need a third act hijinks.
Here's what you had to do. He's off to school. He's not getting along with Penny. They invite the family over. She's interested in the time machine. They go into the past. One get or the other gets lost, and they skip around history trying to get everyone back together.
Yeah.
Done. We don't need, I think bullying plots are lazy kids' movies.
And especially because this one is so harsh.
She is like, horrible.
This is too much. This is dark for what's supposed to be for kids.
Here's the thing. Like, I hate to make this metaphor because that implies that certain humans are like dogs, but it feels like she's bullying her bullying him for having parents of a different race or having gay parents,
right,
yeah,
or
right,
something along those lines.
No, you're right.
Like, I don't want to compare any people to dogs, just to be clear.
Right.
But it really does feel like that, and that's horrible.
Well, it's also like, you have set up this world where, and I'm sorry, like, I am, as someone who has gone through the adoption process.
There you go.
You've set up this world where, yes, a dog was going to be able to adopt legally this child. Not just he found him on this, on, like, you know, that was bad enough that, you know, poor Sherman was, like, thrown away.
In a box!
But, right?
Wearing glasses? Right. Question mark? You care about your kid enough to take him to the optometrist, but you can't take care of him after that.
Right.
Even to drop him off at a firehouse.
So we've created this world where, yeah, a judge is like, yes, you, dog, can raise this human child. And then so now we got to, there was no need to do this whole CPS and like the girl bullying him because his dad was a dog and all that business. Either we accept this or we don't.
The double jump rule. Okay, my dear friend John Feitner, whenever I would complain about something in a video game, he'd be like, well, you know about double jumps? Like, you know, like on like old
Mike Mario.
Oh, yeah. You could double jump by pressing BB, like the right cadence. Uh-huh. He's like, if you accept double jumps that make no sense, you have to accept the other parts of it. And I'm like, let us just accept that Mr. Peabody has a human ward.
Right. That's all.
I did initially go, there's no way that's what happened in the original series. And it was.
It was.
That's the first episode of Peabody's Improbable History is... Is basically the beginning of this movie, him explaining that because he was such a genius and a business tycoon, they were like, yeah, sure, you can
advisor
adopt
to foreign dignitaries, that's whatever they say.
Now, like I said, I've only seen these. Yeah, I saw these as a child, just here and there, a few and far between. But I just always assumed that it was like one of those situations where like Mr. Peabody was like the family dog and only Sherman knew that he could talk and that he was smart and all that bullshit that he had. Like all, this was like a secret from the family.
So I thought it was a Doc Brown Marty McFly relationship, which, as you'll recall, is also never explained. Right. We just accept it.
Right. Yeah, this is true. Like, how did you guys become besties? That's what I want to know.
I will say that as much as this whole storyline annoys me and I think is poorly handled, Dennis Haysbert's delivery of a boy can adopt a dog, so I see no reason a dog can't adopt a boy is so well done. But also,
I can think of several.
Okay, right, yeah. Also,
I got some ideas.
Just to be clear, a boy cannot adopt a dog. Only adults can do that. Mm-hmm.
True story. Yes. Like, kids are not allowed to go into the pound to go pick out a dog without an 18 year old consultant. Yeah. Like, this is.
Okay, so that is definitely a fundamental problem with this movie.
It's also chaos. It's so fucking chaotic. Like, I feel like we're thrown in. It's too much. It's just too much.
It needed to be scaled back. Paired back?
Scaled back?
Trim it. Trim it. Cut the fat. Relax a little bit. I also just don't like this animation style.
Mm. Yeah.
And, like, I believe in my heart, and I couldn't find it last night, but I think that there is a sitcom clip where somebody talks about, like, the inherent upsettingness of 3D models of 2D characters.
Mm.
And
is that what this is?
They say, like, oh, like the Peanuts movie.
Peanuts movie's better than this.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen the Peanuts movie.
You should.
Really? Okay. All right.
Well, and it's... Every time The Simpsons are in 3D, I'm like, nope.
Exactly, right. There is something that doesn't work with our brains. And then the way, it's not just this movie. It's like all of these movies. Mm-hmm. Every DreamWorks movie, most Pixar movies, all of the humans look the same.
Mm.
But then it's like they make some of them too round and some of them too pointy. Yeah. They make some of their eyes too close together and some of their eyes too far apart.
Yeah, okay.
And that's it.
I see what you're saying.
And like,
you're implying that the variations of human are standard and wrong.
Yes.
Yeah.
It just doesn't vibe with me. Like, it doesn't look like the real world and it doesn't look like a fantastical world. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
If it had distinct characteristics, like... I mean, I just think, honestly, you know, when is this movie from?
2014.
Well, that makes me feel better about the president coming over for dinner. Because I definitely was like, which president? But, yeah, okay. I mean, everything after Spider-Verse is different, right? And I feel like now kids' movies get to have their own unique animated styles.
But
thank you.
Even DreamWorks was doing better. Like, I think the Croods had already come out.
Yeah, that's sort of distinct.
And the Croods, like, they all look like rocks, right?
Yeah, well,
like,
I don't know.
They're meant to be. And, like, How to Train Your Dragon is
a little
better.
They all look like
they've
been squashed a little bit, yeah. Miyazaki style.
Yeah. So they knew how... I just feel like so much effort went into this for something that it didn't seem like people were thinking about all that much.
Right. Also, just to be clear, like, it's not just DreamWorks, because, like, they look the same as, like, the neighbors in Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah.
It's like this face just... is in a computer somewhere, and they just keep loading it into a new movie.
This movie, Mr. Peabody and Sherman, or Rick and Morty for four-year-olds, was my reaction, was released March 7th, 2014, and did not win that weekend. It debuted with $32.2 million. That was good for second place behind fellow debut 300 Rise of an Empire. those two flipped positions. The following weekend, Peabody pulled in $21.8 million, $319.2 million. Both held off the debuting Need for Speed, with Aaron Paul, 17.8. All of those movies would drop. The following weekend, Peabody landed in third behind the debuting Divergent, our second episode.
Ah, yes. Shout with out. Tony.
And Muppets Most Wanted was second that weekend. 6 weeks in the top 10, 28th overall for 2014. So why did this happen? This is all the result of a massive intellectual property deal.
Hang on, what?
Yeah, in 2012, DreamWorks Animation bought a thing called Classic Media and rebranded it DreamWorks Classics. Mm. And this is a massive library of some content, but mostly just the rights to intellectual properties.
So like characters. Yes. It's like Betty Boop in there.
Among hundreds of others.
Okay.
Mr. Magoo, Lassie, Casper the Friendly Ghost, Richie Rich, The Lone Ranger, the Rankin-Bass Holiday Specials. Ooh. That's where they make their money.
Oh my God. Please give me an origin story for the Heat Miser.
Lamb Chop is in there. Veggie Tales.
Oh, I loved Lamb Chop.
Fat Albert, He-Man, Voltron, Felix the Cat, Where's Waldo?
And they started here?
And everything related to Rocky and Bullwinkle, they started here because it was a long gestating passion project for the director, Rob Minkoff.
Who, shame on you, Rob.
Whose previous animated film.
I recognize that name.
His previous animated film was The Lion King.
Okay, well, what? There you go. I recognize his name because I've seen it in the credits 500 times.
The co-director, it was a co-director of The Lion King.
Okay.
Clearly brought none of that visual panache.
Was he under duress during this?
That was not the part of the directing that he did.
I guess not. He just...
Maybe he did the voice acting.
He was the voices.
I thought... Okay. That's another fundamental problem. I did actually... I think I'm going to be, like, right around the midpoint, spoilers, but, like, another fundamental problem with this movie is that Ty Burrell is miscast.
How so?
Ty Burrell's whole deal is that he plays characters who are either very simple or very boring, right? Mm. And this character is neither of those things, so I totally understand why his agent wanted him to play this role, but he can't, in my opinion. And then also, it felt kind of like the Scar in Lion King 2019 and Mufasa problem of, like, butching up this character to make him palatable. Because, like, I'm not saying...
You think Ty Burrell is butch?
No, I mean, compared to Mr. Peabody, yes, is the thing. And also just less... I feel like he portrays Mr. Peabody as less annoying than he should be. Mm. And I'm like, let your character be an annoying know-it-all.
Yeah.
Said as an annoying know-it-all.
Sure.
I corrected you earlier.
Yeah.
Right?
On a tiny joke,
I, like,
yet.
Literally... Yeah. Have been in the situation that Sherman was in where the girl was like, I've got the answers you want.
Mm-hmm.
And being like, well, the lesson is wrong.
You're the Ty Burrell fan, despite him being my classmate separated by several years. Ty Burrell and I, several years apart, both went to Penn State School of Theater. I mean, he was gone considerably before I started, but.
Hey, I brag about being born in the same hospital as Meryl Streep.
Sure. Yeah. If I gave you an hour, you wouldn't guess who he was replacing. He was a replacement in this movie.
No.
I'm trying to
Jack from Just Jack.
I'm going to guess. Wait, I had it for a second. Edward Norton.
No, but they're separated by only one Marvel leading role. Robert Downey Jr. was supposed to play.
No,
really,
Mr. Peabody. Jeez, oh Pete.
And just decided he was too Iron Man busy at the time and had to back out.
I can see it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't like it though.
I might have liked it better.
I know. Yeah, I think I might have been more into it. Because I'm just like, because I enjoy Ty Burrell a lot, but it's not like, you know, yeah, he's the reason I go see a movie. Like, mm-hmm. I enjoy his Modern Family body of work the most. And so it just, that was very distracting to me. Watching this, I'm just thinking about Phil from Modern Family the whole time.
He's also an Incredible Hulk. That's what I was talking about when I said, or boring.
Ty Burrell is an Incredible Hulk.
It's like, he is clearly Liv Tyler's boring boyfriend.
Clearly she has proved her point. Because I don't remember that.
I'm 90% sure that's true.
Where were we? Director Rob Minkoff. This was his return to animation. He did some other, he did the Stuart Littles. Like, he did some other stuff in between. But he began pitching a Peabody and Sherman movie in 2003. And it was this DreamWorks Classics deal that allowed him to do it. We are basing this on the 91 original episodes of Peabody's Improbable History. I say 91. They're 5 minutes long.
It's, yeah, I know. But still, I would have guessed 40.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They aired, and they aired over just 2 years. The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle and Friends was on from 1959 to 64.
Hey, Rocky.
Yes, correct.
Very nice.
Thanks.
but all of the Peabody episodes were in 1959 and 60. So it had been 54 years since the nearest Mr. Peabody content when this hit theaters.
Assume you had not gone this deep into the tall grass, but I noticed in the credits it said characters from Rocky and His Friends. And I was like, what the fuck is that?
No idea.
So then I was like, wait, is Bullwinkle like a Steve Urkel? Was that show supposed to be about Rocky the Flying Squirrel and then everybody latched on to a side character?
I guess it was technically called Rocky and His Friends, but then changed to Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle or some shit like that.
Okay, hypothesis. Bullwinkle is a Steve Urkel.
Yeah.
Yeah, it started as Rocky and His Friends and just kept getting renamed, but was sometimes the Bullwinkle Show, too. I have not. This
Urkel.
This is the longest Wikipedia page. It just keeps going.
I mean, this is literally boomers remembering their childhood.
Yeah. There's a whole thing that says revival attempts, not successes. Just an attempt. Oh, this movie did go to a TV series. There is a TV series
what?
That spun off of this movie,
what?
Which aired on Netflix from 25 to 7, four seasons, 52 episodes on Netflix from 2015 to 17.
I completely had no, like, this was in my blind spot for real.
Yeah.
For some reason, this is one of those things that they've taken off the service for no clear reason. Like, you can still get it. You can buy the seasons.
Probably because they have to spend money
on that license.
To DreamWorks, yeah.
Yeah.
Spend money, you know what I mean.
The kid stuck around, so good for him. Max Charles is the lad's name.
Lad.
Ty Burrell had other things to do and was replaced by Chris Parnell. That makes perfect sense.
Dr. Spaceman.
What, do I have anything else? This is the fourth film based on a Rocky and Bullwinkle character, and oddly the first that was fully animated.
Huh.
It started with Boris and Natasha in 1991, which is live
action. What?
There's a 1991 movie called Boris and Natasha.
Who plays Boris and Natasha?
Well, let me see if I can remember.
Okay.
Was it Angelica Houston? She was, am I confusing her with Addams Family?
I mean, she is in Addams Family, but she could have been.
Who was Boris? I remember this.
Oh, it's a television film. I'm sorry.
Never mind.
Shouldn't really count it.
I mean,
I thought it was an actual film. Boris and Natasha, or maybe, I don't know.
Because there was a live action one with Rene Russo playing Natasha and Robert De Niro playing Fearless Leader.
I think so.
2000's The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Which I saw in the theater and which is god awful.
Roger Rabbit style.
It's just bad.
Boris and Natasha was a television movie. It was Dave Thomas and Sally Kellerman.
Academy Award nominee, Sally Kellerman.
Oh, I'm confusing with whoever played them in the live action Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Okay, which was Rene Russo, and who played Boris Badenov? So like John Polito or something.
Jason Alexander.
Oy.
Lee.
Late 90s.
Listen, he had one thing. He was good at it.
He's good at being the bad guy in Pretty Woman.
I was about to say.
Yeah, okay.
We are leaving out Dudley Do-Right from 1999.
Oh, starring Academy Award winner Brendan Fraser.
I'll bet that's the best of these four.
I bet
movies.
It is. Yeah.
It was fine.
Okay.
Because, you know, I was on that watch or whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
I was going to say on that Camila's Lifetime.
Right, yes, exactly.
Was he also George of the Jungle?
He sure was.
He was. It was. It would have been much better if he had not spoken in that movie. But, you know, what else?
I have anything else? Any other? Oh, Mr. Peabody's first name is Hector, just in case.
Thank you.
It's Hector
Peabody. I will happily file that away.
Mm-hmm.
Hope a trivia night.
Exactly,
works
right?
In your favor.
All that said, the most shocking moment in this or several other movies is that they paid John Lennon. They paid to license a John Lennon movie, a John Lennon song for this movie. Someone said, we need to have Beautiful Boy, and they went, okay.
Oh, that's who that is. Okay. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think it even is in the movie, Beautiful Boy.
Right.
I know that Steve Carell sings it in Beautiful.
Oh, okay,
like,
never mind.
Like, sings it kind of like while he's going around the house.
I only saw that movie one time for obvious reasons. It's sad and not that great. It's in Mr. Holland's opus. It's got to be one of the cheaper entries.
I guess. Yeah, it's just, it would, if it had been funny, yeah. You know.
I laughed sometimes.
I laughed at Patrick Warburton.
Me too.
He was the MVP, I thought.
Is that Putty?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He makes me chuckle all the time. And also, there were a couple moments with Penny's parents, like her dad, like kind of made me laugh.
It was Stephen Colbert.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
And somebody was the mom?
Leslie Mann.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes.
They had a good cast.
Yes. Yeah.
Mel Brooks was here for some reason.
Respect?
That's when he would pop up.
Yeah.
And, you know, when he was only 90, he's like, oh, come down, whatever.
I genuinely think for things that he liked,
mm-hmm.
I think, I'm guessing, based on sense of humor, he liked Rocky and Bullwinkle, right? Yeah. Like, he was a grown-up when it was on, but, like, I think he was like, yep, you do my kind of weird stuff. Sherman is very History of the World Part 1.
Yeah,
so, true. Like, it makes sense to me.
I think one of the most shocking things about this for me was, and I don't remember the context of it, but I have it written down here, that towards the end, Clinton, like, they're trying to, whatever.
Bill Clinton is there, who is alive.
Yes, but he's like, for whatever reason, they're trying to condemn, I think, Mr. Peabody for something, and they're all like, don't do it or whatnot, and Clinton pops up and is like, I've done worse.
That's correct.
In a kid's movie?
Like, also,
this is what we're doing?
Has he? Are we? I don't want to get into this.
No, go ahead. There's nothing else to talk about. You're saying lying about a blowjob is worse than ripping a hole in the space-time continuum.
Infidelitous blowjob.
Certainly.
I think that's what we're going
for. I think that's what
infidelity.
We're going for, and I'm
going
to go with
and,
no.
And also kind of throwing her under the bus where it's all concerned. I know. Through the gaslighting and the lying.
Yeah,
and
I don't like it. I kind of think this movie hates women, and I know I say that all the time, but there's not that many women in it, and they're all annoying in one way or another.
Penny is a problem.
Penny is a big nightmare. She's a like only nice person. The only nice woman in this movie is Penny's mom. And she's pretty empty.
Yeah.
Right?
She's very but void of life.
The CPS lady is just, you know, shrill to 11. Mm-hmm.
That character bothered me. I mean, because
I'm sorry. I just like this. I feel like Child Protective Services is not something that we should be lightly including in kids' movies.
No, it's not. This is not a play thing. It's not playtime.
Yes.
And you don't fuck around with that, because like now is the time. Like it's like, never mind.
No, I know. It's one of these things where it's like, I don't even want to get into it, right, but also I'm mad about it.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
So let me back away.
Yes. I'm like, it is not worth getting upset over this.
Over Mr.
11-year-old movie that no one
Sherman.
Remembers. Exactly. But also, if I think about it too hard, I will get upset. So let's not. I've also got a lot for You Can't Handle the Truth. So let's move on.
Okay. There is a subset of children's movies that, like, you look at them and you want to just go, eh, whatever, it's fine. And then you go, wait just a minute.
Yeah.
Right.
Like The Boss Baby is another one. Like the politics of The Boss Baby are very tricky.
The whole I am a dog too, ugh.
Ah, gross. No, it would have worked so much better if they just stuck with the I'm also a genius, right? It's like the thing that we have in common is we are a family of geniuses.
Yes.
It does not matter. We are different species.
Right.
Come on.
I guess getting fired out of the Sphinx's butt is funny.
Oh my God.
I will say.
And there's a few Pratt
one of
slapsticky
my
moments.
Biggest laughs in this whole movie was when she's like, why shouldn't I be engaged to King Tut? And Sherman says, his name rhymes with butt. And then I was like, I am at my heart a 4-year-old.
Yeah.
Even Kaggia walked out on this.
I feel like.
Tried to make it a big deal. Like, oh, we're going to watch this movie.
We got a
kid's
movie going.
Like, let's have a fan. She was like, 20 minutes in, she's like, I'm out.
Do you like explain to her, like, I need to watch a movie for work?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, like for the podcast. And she's sort of kind of. Has a grasp of what a podcast is.
Sure. I mean, we had that clip of her go back to our Paw Patrol episode.
But it's funny because my friend Marcella and I, and for those Buffy fans out there, we have just completed the Revisiting Sunnydale
congratulations.
Podcast.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Hey, congratulations.
And Marcella was and I were doing it virtually for like the last couple of months. And every so often, Kaj would see her on the on the computer. And she would think that Marcella lives up here.
Oh,
she's like, she lives in the computer.
I don't know what to do about that.
Nice.
Is that Marcella in the computer?
Yes. Oh my God.
Has she, how old is Kaja?
5. She'll be 6 next month.
Has she been to the movies?
Not yet, because she is a, you know what? I am too precious about movie going experiences, and I am not ready to try to tame her in that. What I'd like to do, maybe eventually we'll go ahead and like rent out the theater for her birthday situation, for some sort of celebration as to where all the kids, I just feel like, even if it is a kid's movie, like, I don't know. It's just too much.
I know it's different when it's your actual kid because you feel more responsible for their behavior. But having taken a small child to the movies, all of the small children are being annoying.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like the one kid stands out as, like, the one disrupting the experience for everyone. And that, honestly, for me, becomes part of the experience. Right? Like, I remember seeing Moana 2, and that movie gets really boring. And all the kids, including the kid I was there with, start running around.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's fun.
Because she's also in, like, she's a lot like me in the sense of, like, we're going to go do this thing. We're going to go do this thing. We're going to go to this place. Then we get there 10 minutes in, she's like, I'm ready to go home.
Yeah.
I'll try the drive-in, maybe.
Oh, that's actually a really good call.
Ease in that way. Yeah. All right, we're just talking about other stuff now because there's 32. I tried to get to the like 1/3 because the weird thing about this was well reviewed. This is an 81% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really?
Wow.
There's a lot of very positive reviews, and I'm like, why did what? I think it's probably because
boomer nostalgia.
Boomer nostalgia. Oh, just boy. People got kind.
Listen, I loved Rocky and Bullwinkle when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Like I
watched it a lot.
I remember setting an alarm for earlier so that I could wake up and watch it.
Yeah, it was on like a ridiculous time.
I think it was on at 6:30. Yeah. I think I would like try to wake up before 6:30, and that was like my reward for getting out of bed was getting to watch Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Get you.
So like even with that.
Yeah. It's when
I don't know. I said I came in here around 50, getting mad at it. I'm going down to 45.
24.
Yeah, this is not going to go very high on our list. That's a 33 2/3.
Oh, glad that's over.
Not anything to recommend if you were spending lots of time thinking, should I watch the Mr. Peabody and Sherman movie from 2014? We can clear that up for you. To a new bingo card, Camila. Yay. What do we have?
We have Falsely Accused Killer. One of us met an actor from the movie.
I'm excited for this one, and I will be no help. Unless Kevin McDonald, unless we pull Lilo and Stitch, you are fucked.
We also have Mistaken Identity and, okay, It's Your Turn Fight, which means...
I was going to say, I don't totally recognize this.
It's like one guy takes on 5 guys, and they all wait for their turn to fight him instead of attacking them.
I like
all
that.
At once.
Very good.
Inspired by one of my You Can't Handle the Truth movies.
Okay.
So yeah, I guess we don't have any of this is on here.
Was there any Mistaken Identity? Did any of those just... No, that's the thing too. I mean, I guess this is related to the original, but every time they show up somewhere, everyone's just like, oh, hey.
Yeah.
There's no like...
Who? How?
Yeah. No. Not that the like... rules of the universe are the problem. Yeah, we got nothing.
All right, well, maybe the we all saw the same movie for You Can't Handle the Truth. Maybe. We'll see.
We could get there.
Okay.
Let me, this is a thing I'm excited about that I want to tell the listeners about, but I'm nervous to say it because I'm going to do a thing that... This should be yours, but it's mine, and I'm going
to
keep it.
What does this mean?
I swear to you, if Robert Downey Jr. or Tom Hardy are involved in this in any sort of way.
Not those two, but certainly on your list. Hey, join me at the Carnegie Homestead Music Hall on June the 14th, where we will watch The Princess Bride, and I will host a chat with Cary Elwes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. It should be you. It's... this is for you.
Down to the floor.
And yet, I'm gonna.
You need to at least get her a comp.
Yeah.
Real.
Can you I'm sure.
Hook a sister
I'm
up.
Sure I can.
When is this happening?
I'm very excited about it. I just knew coming in here.
Yes, congratulations.
Like,
I'm very proud of you.
Saturday, June the 14th, Carnegie Homestead. They'll show the film. Yeah.
I will go with you.
I'm going to put it on my calendar now to make sure that I remember June the 14th. I am like close to, I'm literally going to cry right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Is he one of the ones who's held your baby?
Yes.
Yep, there you go.
So it's, you've met him. It's not like you haven't met him. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth.
Oh, wait, did we talk about the trailer?
No.
Oh, no.
I think I was just pissed about the most amazing dog in history leaving his mark.
Oh, shit. No, I do want to put that in. All right, do it.
For Mr. Peabody, the only thing harder than being the world's most extraordinary dog is being an ordinary dad.
Oh, my.
Now.
Oh, dear.
He's taking family time.
You've used time travel improperly.
To another dimension.
We must rewrite history in order to save the universe.
I did not see that coming.
This March.
How do you take off? You just pull down that lever. This one? Oh, boy.
The most amazing dog of all time.
Hang on!
Is leaving his mark. On history. DreamWorks, Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
Why can't children be simple?
Yeah, that's gross. Come
on. It's so wrong.
It's not even good at dog jokes.
No.
You know how I have to, I was elected valedictorian.
No. What? Come on.
It's just the word dog in a word where it doesn't fit. It's just.
I would go.
Canine-dictorian.
I would have said summa dog laude.
Apparently, you're closer to the, apparently the original was, that was in the original. And it was something better, but still not good. I don't know. I'll find it later.
And letterbox list?
Oh, this is interesting because it makes you do more research. Movie franchises that never were. Things that were supposed to launch a franchise and did not. Because there's stuff on there that I'm like, what? Like, Scarface is on there.
What?
And Platoon is on there.
How?
Leon the Professional is on there.
Well,
like,
I could...
Is Willem Dafoe's character in Born on the 4th of July meant to be the same as his character in Platoon? No, because he's dead. Never mind. Spoilers! Okay. It's on the poster, people. It's literally on the poster.
I thought he was just going, yay, war.
I think Tom Berenger's also in Born on the 4th of July.
Wagna like cum laude.
That's good. Yeah, that's better. So much better. See,
so
professional
much better.
Comedians.
Right.
No, that's not me. That's the actual thing.
I know.
Wagna.
Sorry. I forgot you're a professional comedian.
Semi-professional.
I mean, so am I.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
This movie has hurt us somehow. Robin, you said you have a lot.
Okay.
Get it going.
Well, actually, I want to... Can Camila start? Because I'm so curious about this fight thing.
Oh, yeah. I've only have the one.
Okay.
Jack Reacher, I finally watched.
Oh! The TV show or the Tom Cruise movie?
The Tom Cruise movie, filmed here. And filmed here in Pittsburgh. Very good use of Pittsburgh.
Excellent Pittsburgh cinema.
Right.
They're at DeLuca's Diner. They still have a little thing up on the chair.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting this. Like, I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I did. Like, it's not a typical, I don't want to say typical. It's a more of a cerebral action film. As to where they don't, a lot of, like, any emotion and everything that we're feeling is coming directly from the actors and what's being on screen. They don't lean in on the music score. Like, there's no, like, the fight scenes and all the car chase scenes, there's no music.
Yeah.
There's no soundtrack to it, which I found refreshing and just, like, kind of a cool thing. So, I really liked it, like, a lot.
The sequel's good, too, with Kobe Smulders in it. And also, I haven't watched
Jack
the TV
Reached.
Show. I think it's called Jack Reacher.
No, I was making...
Never
if the first
down,
one is Reacher,
stop,
then
stopping.
The second one would
it.
Be Reached.
Anyway, I recommend the second one, and I've never watched
professional
TV
comedian.
Show,
go on.
But people... I'm sorry, Sean.
No. I just loved how flat that joke fell. Please continue.
Okay.
The TV show.
The TV show is apparently quite good, and, like, one of the important things about that character in the books is that he's an enormous man, and so it's very funny. They cast canonically
tiny Tom Cruise.
Yes. So, but they found an actual enormous man to play him in the TV show.
Really? That's funny, because I just kind of, he's the reason why I don't feel I can watch the show.
Apparently, he's like a nice person.
I mean, I'm sure he is. It's just it's just too much. Yeah, it's too much.
He is really big.
So if you guys haven't seen Jack Reacher, I'm probably one of the last people who haven't. So yeah,
I watched that on the plane leaving Pittsburgh. I'm not sure which time.
Sometimes I'm just in a Tom Cruise running across town.
Listen, he is cinema's greatest runner.
Yeah.
Okay. And Cynthia Erivo, number two.
Nice.
Mission Impossible, we've reckoned with it, is out in a couple of months.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which, sweet. Is that supposed to be the last one?
It supposed to be.
I will never believe them.
Yeah.
I don't believe any.
Yeah.
You know, don't even get me started with the Saw bit.
We don't have time for this.
No. Well, who's next?
All right.
That's all you got?
Yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have a lot. So let's start with Mickey 17.
I've seen that.
Talk about it, Sean.
I liked it a lot more than you.
I think everyone liked it a lot more than me.
I'm impressed that he doesn't, lots of people change genre, he changes tone. Right?
Oh, that's a really good way of putting it.
Tarantino changes genre, always the same tone.
Yeah.
Or almost the same tone. Mm. This feels completely different than Snowpiercer, feels completely different than Okja, feels completely different than Parasite.
But they all say capitalism bad.
Yes. The themes continue. But yeah, I mean, you know, he switched to a very dark comedy and I think was nearly as successful at it as, you know, not Parasite, but it's unfair to compare to
its
instant all-time classic, right? Parasite. You know, there are aspects of this movie that I didn't love as much, but the core plot is so good. You know, I can tell you, like, this was one of my most anticipated movies of the year, and it didn't, like, knock that ball into the river, but, like, it still totally worked for me. And Robert Pattinson is so great.
I think I just don't like him. The only thing I've ever really liked him in was Tenet, which is a movie I didn't overall enjoy.
Okay.
Didn't like him as Batman. I've only seen a couple of the Twilight movies.
You see Good Time?
I didn't finish Good Time.
It's very stressful.
Yeah,
I've only seen him in the Twilight movies and the Batman or whatever. Mm-hmm.
He's probably popped up in other things I've seen, but I remember in Tenet being like, where have you been, Robert Pattinson? And he's not in this.
He was in some movie. He was very good. Some movie with Tom Holland. I think. Was it like,
that sounds
like
true.
He's like some sort of preacher in like a backwoods.
Oh,
yes.
He was very good.
I also the started devil all that the movie. Time.
Yeah.
Yes.
That yeah, was he was good. Very good in that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
He was better than that movie is. That movie's okay. He's great. Yeah.
I need Mark Ruffalo to calm down.
What's he done?
He's playing sort of Trump, sort of RFK Jr., sort of Elon Musk.
I described it to Robin as a stew of douches.
Yes. Yeah. It's,
and that's how she said
it's so, ugh. And then also, listen, to be clear, I was not in the right place to receive this movie, okay? Because, like, I just, like, my career has fizzled out, and literally immediately before we went into the movie, my husband was like, look how cool it is that ChatGPT means I'll never have to hire a secretary, which is what my old job was. So I immediately, like,
just, read the room.
Just immediately, I love you, Colin, but you're such an idiot. so, yeah, like, I just was, like, weeping, like, early on, and this movie is not meant to be a weep about capitalism movie. So like, I'm not really in a position to like
offer up your opinion,
view it as a film critic,
right? Yeah.
Yes, but I will also say I felt really uncomfortable with how they used Naomi Ackie's character in this movie, and I just do not want to see a black woman like wearing a bit for 40 minutes of a movie ever.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, so like, I don't think that was done with malice.
No,
I think that was done out of cluelessness,
yeah.
But I'm not comfortable watching it.
It's tricky when, you know, I mean, this is probably an equally reductive statement. It's tricky when you have filmmakers from another place making for us, trying to reconcile those cultural contexts.
Right. The history of racism in Korea is very different.
Right.
They're very different than the history of racism in the United States.
I did like Toni Collette. My headcanon is that she's the main villain because
she's funny.
What's the sauces are the true litmus test of society?
She was funny. She knew what she was doing.
I love her.
Yeah.
Also,
listen, I do not think this is a poorly done movie. I just hated watching it.
This is also the day I realized that Toni Collette, Tilda Swinton, and Cate Blanchett are the same species. And I don't
Australian woman?
Are they all Australian?
Pretty sure.
Toni Collette.
Not sure about
Toni Collette, Kate Blanchett, and Tilda Swinton are like three faces of the same dye.
I could see it.
Yeah. And they're all great. All three of them. One of them should be in every movie.
I don't think Kate Blanchett's Australian.
Okay.
Is she just British?
No, I think she's Australian British. Because I think when she won her second Oscar, they said, did you know this means you're the first actor, Australian actor,
yeah,
to win
right.
a second Oscar?
She is.
And she said, and don't you forget it.
But I want to ask you about the fact that you are the first Australian actor or actress ever to win two Oscars.
Don't you fucking forget it.
Nice. Tilda.
See if I can find that.
Tilda is just British.
Okay. I think I just thought that because her name is Matilda.
Yeah. I liked it. Robin was cool on it. No, I think everyone is like, I haven't heard anyone that said this is as good as Parasite.
Nobody thinks that.
Because no one thinks that. I do feel like the whole world is a little like, I got most of my money's worth out of that movie. I feel like that it did overpromise a little bit, but I still give it a 9 out of 10.
There's no way it could be as good as Parasite.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
Right.
That was not my expectation, just to be clear.
I mean, he hasn't made a movie since. It has been 5 years,
okay.
Which a little bit is like, you're going to wait 5 years.
When did Okja come out?
Well before.
Oh,
like
okay.
2016 or something.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
Novocaine. Surprisingly enjoyable.
Yeah.
I really thought I was not going to like that because I get squeamish about gore because I don't like Jack Quaid. And it's just a very charming movie.
It looks like it would be fun.
It is a breeze the thing. Like, I did have to watch a lot of it through my hair, and I very appropriately
Because of the gore?
Yes. And like, I just conveniently, somebody up there likes me, chose to pee during the scene where he deep fries his hand. Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad I missed that because that was definitely one of the things that like they allude to in the trailer where I was like, can't, nope, absolutely not. But yeah, so I watched a lot of it through my hair, but I had a good time.
I had a good time.
Sean liked it less than me and Mary Beth.
This is the opposite. And this is closer. This is like you two gave it 3.5. I gave it 3. I like it. This is the first time I've thought that Jack Quaid might be a movie star.
100%. This is the most likable he's ever been because I think he has some movie star qualities when he plays a bad guy, but this is the first time I've like rooted for him.
This, because Robin didn't see Smile 2, this is the day that Robin discovered that Jack Nicholson has a son.
Yes.
Oh. Who has the same forehead.
I was like, who's this young Aaron Paul?
Young Aaron Paul.
Aaron Paul takes the substance and Jack Nicholson's son comes out of his back.
But to steal my own line.
But the young Aaron Paul, like, he's got to be your age.
No, what?
Are we talking about the same
first
person?
Of all, yes, Breaking Bad guy. We talked about him earlier. First of all, he might be my age, but I'm middle-aged.
Aaron Paul is 45.
Okay.
Oh.
So he's 5 years older than me, and Jack Nicholson's son is 10 years younger than me.
Okay.
Yes.
So, like, young Aaron Paul.
All right. Does have a forehead on him.
Mm-hmm.
God bless him.
To steal my own line, I just thought that Novocaine is trying to have its cake and stab it too. like, it wants us to laugh at all the wacky, violent slapstick. Like, this is Deadpool. This is the Three Stooges. This is Naked Gun. Oh my God, something horrific happened. Laugh. But also feel bad when the bank manager gets killed and the innocent bystanders get killed and they shoot up the EMTs and the like. It tries for stakes and absurdity at the same time.
That's
and
a I'm valid like, criticism.
I think you had to pick one or the other.
Okay,
but I still had fun seeing it. Dependable Drive-In is double featuring Novocaine and the Monkey, and that's just
I was just gonna use that as a comparison.
Three glorious hours of people being dismembered in hilarious fashion. If you have a stomach for man, that the final kill we won't give away. That was like even I was like,
it's gross. It's gross. I don't want to talk about it. But enjoyable movie, surprisingly enjoyable movie. The Gorge, which is on Apple Plus. Is the movie where Miles Teller and Anya Taylor-Joy are on opposite sides of a gorge filled with monsters and they fall in love via whiteboard communication. Whatever. The whiteboard communication part of it is so much better than the monsters part of it. Which, like, what? You should be able to do better monsters. The character design is really cool. It's very derivative. It's basically like Annihilation Groots. Mm-hmm. Okay? But, like, it's cool, but they don't Jaws it.
Right.
They just show you their cheap CGI. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, go back to the flirting across the gorge. But first time I've ever found Miles Teller not annoying.
Really? Because so, I find him so annoying.
Josh Axelrod, our fellow Pittsburgh Film Critics Association member, said that he's only not annoying because of the halo of Anya Taylor-Joy. And I'm mad at her for a single white female like Charlize, but I'm willing to accept that premise.
She did who with the what?
Because she plays Furiosa and because she took over doing Jador Dior commercials.
Oh, yeah. She's doing those commercials now?
And so is Rihanna. Listen.
I think so. Charlize is fine.
But she's just a 50-year-old woman, and that's not allowed to be a thing.
You know, maybe she's like, I'm fine. Leave me alone.
Maybe she's like, I got to raise my daughters, right?
Right,
like,
yeah.
I assume that's what Jennifer Lawrence is doing. That's why we haven't seen her in years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jennifer Lawrence has kids?
At least one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When she started, I was like, Jennifer Lawrence will one day have more Oscars than Meryl Streep because she's like 21 and she's an automatic nominee every time. And then after a few years, she's like, oh, I got all this money and a kid. I'll be back later. It's fine.
Yeah, good for her.
Also, I mean, she's also 10 years younger than me, but she is now too old for them to make movies for her unless she produces them herself.
Such a sad state of affairs.
Yes. So...
it's gross.
So the Gorge wasn't good?
No, actually, here's what I'm going to say. If you are home and you have Apple Plus and you're like, what the fuck are we going to watch? Put on the Gorge and stop it when you lose interest, right? Like,
just walk away.
It is totally an like, I enjoyed watching it. Mm. Let's put it that way. And then I watched The Electric State.
How was that?
I was really happy when I came up with something else to review that week, so I didn't have to watch The Electric State.
It's really, really bad. Like, it is... it's one of those movies that seems pretend. Uh-huh. Like, it seems like a movie in the background of The Last Action Hero. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It seems like the movie that they go see on Seinfeld. It's like Sack Lunch instead of seeing The English Patient. Like, it seems pretend. I found out after watching it that they spent $320 million on it. And some of it has a ridiculous cast, so I hope some of that went to keeping those actors well-fed. But, like... Where did this money go? Because it's ugly and doesn't really make all that much sense. And it's just a very, very bad film. And I do want to say, I see a lot of film blue sky, film Twitter, Letterboxd people are just like constantly like, the Russo brothers are everything that's wrong with modern cinema, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, based on this film, and I'm like, yeah, correct. But like, I don't want us to revisionist history. The Russo brothers, they made Winter Soldier, which everybody has in their top five MCU movies. And also they landed the plane with Infinity War and Endgame. Like, it's not their fault that they kept making bad Marvel movies after they landed the plane, but they successfully landed the plane.
No, but I think they're really good plane landers.
Yeah.
They were the best at not arguing, right?
Okay.
Like, they were the best at walking into Marvel and Marvel going, like, you're not really here to put your stamp on
this.
Right,
exactly.
You're here to do very well with, you're playing Chopped. We're handing you the ingredients, make something that tastes good.
But I think they were good at Chopped.
Yeah, they were the best at that. There is zero evidence that they're good directors without...
They're good at making sitcom episodes.
Paint by numbers.
Kevin Feige. Yeah, I mean, without someone telling them what to do. I trust you on this. Cherry was bad. Gray Man was bad. The movie they did before Captain America was You, Me, and Dupree. They're not good filmmakers.
Okay. I'm sorry. Gray Man was bad?
Yeah, I was going to say I enjoyed Gray Man.
I love the hell out of that movie.
Like, I wouldn't be like, Gray Man was good. But I'm like, yeah, okay, that did what it needed to do. Yeah. Anyway. I'm not going to argue that they are... cinematic visionaries. I'm just going to say I am kind of annoyed that they've become cinematic punching bags.
No, I don't think you need to beat up on them, but
plenty of other directors that deserve that.
I think you need to stop giving them $200 million.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're like, we have an idea for a science fiction. Yeah, whatever. It's fine.
Apparently, this is based on like a really good art book.
A graphic novel.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, whatever. Terrible.
Allegedly, they're back. They're just coming back. Like, they're directing the next two Avengers movies.
Okay.
Stop.
Sure. Two movies I would like to recommend, because a lot of my... So one is from last year. It's called Ghostlight. Did you see that?
No, okay. I heard of it.
So Ghostlight is... It's I think the reason that it didn't get a lot of traction is that it's thematically very similar to Sing Sing, but like much less compelling than Sing Sing. But basically, it is community theater helping a guy process grieving his son's death by suicide.
Mm.
And he's in Romeo and Juliet. And like, it's my Letterboxd review is subtlety is for cowards, because basically he's like playing, first he has to play Lord Capulet and discover Juliet's air quotes dead body and deliver a monologue, and he can't do it. And then they recast him as Romeo, and he's like, I can't understand why anyone would ever take their own life. And his daughter, who's played by his actual daughter, his actual wife and his actual daughter play his wife and daughter, which is adorable. And she's so good, the daughter especially. She's basically like talks him through, like, you have to understand why your son, my brother, did what he did in order to play Romeo correctly in this community theater production of Romeo and Juliet. And I'm like, I loved it. It is beautiful. It's on Hulu right now. I do recommend it.
Go to your local community theater, everybody.
Yes.
I'm not going to say what I've seen recently, because whenever I say this, it sounds like I'm diminishing
condescending.
It.
Yeah.
But it's like, when you go into the theater with no expectations and pay about $15, and people are just trying really hard and doing their best, and you get a little snack at intermission and enter the 50-50 raffle, you have a nice night every time.
It's true.
It's just, yeah, anyway.
Dolly De Leon plays the Juliet character, and I love her. She's so good. Mm-hmm. So yeah, highly recommend Ghostlight. And then the other one, which is mostly a recommendation for you, Camila, is Petite Maman, which is Celine Sciamma. She did Portrait of a Lady on Fire. I might not be pronouncing any of that correctly because I'm not French, but this is a 72-minute movie, the premise of which is a grandmother dies. The mother and daughter are sort of like processing that. The mother walks away. The daughter follows and meets a girl her age who looks just like her.
Mm.
And it's, you know, you figure out really quickly. That's her mother. She's meeting her mother at the age she currently is. They're played by twins. And it, you know, my mom died 20 years ago. And like, one of the things that's hard for me is like, you know, adults with their parents, like, get to figure out, like, here's what I didn't understand about you when I was a kid and you were an adult. Like, I didn't ever get to share my life with my parents as adults. Aww. Well, I'm crying. But this movie was so meaningful to me because it's like, no one ever gets that. Mm-hmm. No one ever gets to be in the place in their life that their parents were at that time. You never get to be an 8-year-old with your parents as an 8-year-old. And it's beautiful. I don't know. It was one of those movies that, like, I thought was going to make me sad. Oh, Camila's coming to give me a hug.
Camila is currently giving Robin a hug.
Thank you.
Being the better person in the room. Now I didn't hug Robin and took the Carrie Always Show.
It's
just
okay.
A dick.
I called you not a professional comedian. So, yeah. Anyway, it was one of those movies that I thought was going to emotionally devastate me. And even though I am crying describing it, it was so beautiful and profound. And I think that anybody who has mommy or daughter issues should watch this movie. And it's only 72 minutes
long. Yes, that's beautiful. Like,
yes.
Make your point.
Yep. All right. Thank you for the hug, Camila.
Yes. Great recommendation. And she's a great film. I mean, everyone.
I need to see everything she's ever done because both of her movies that I've seen are 5 stars for me. So, yeah.
Do you want to call it there after that?
That's it.
Emotional crescendo. Yes. The big things I had to talk about were Mickey 17 and Novocaine. I did see Last Breath. I got stuck under
Woody Harrelson's in a tank.
Woody Harrelson and Simu Liu and a third guy that isn't famous named Finn Cole. Is that him? Hold on. I don't want to miss the key character. You can't call him the lead because he's unconscious for most of the movie.
Oh, really? Oh,
yes, Finn Cole, who was in, I don't know, something.
I recognize this face.
He was in Peaky Blinders. He's a Peaky Blinders
guy.
They are divers. It is their job to fix, like, pipeline on the ocean floor. You know, things go wrong, and he gets caught down there, and there's a storm, and the ship's blown away, and he is running out of oxygen and has in the dark, and they can't find him, and they know where the this is.
I don't
want
to watch this. I don't want to watch this.
Like, I just lost breath.
Yes.
It's that letterbox. I've named this letterbox list the Getting Stuck in Terrible Places Cinematic Universe.
Yes.
I find
Which
these movies
love.
So compelling. This is a great watch and then immediately read about the real guy on the internet
nope.
movie. You know, it's just really compelling drive-in movie or TBS movie or whatever. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's not that good. I liked it more than most people on Letterboxd who are like, why does this have a dumb Lifetime movie plot where they're getting engaged? And it's like, because that's how movies have to work
yeah,
sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just play it pretty straight.
I do think drive-in is probably the right place.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you Open can escape. Field is-
yes. yeah.
a very, there's no water anywhere in sight.
Ever tell you about time accidentally driving by a drive-in?
No. What? How does that even happen?
One time my friend Katie and I...
One time, okay, see, one time Randy Bemis...
Years ago, we were driving home for Christmas back to Toledo, Ohio, and it was dark, and we passed... Well, it was dark, and we start to see this sand just, like, coming... What looked like dirt and sand just, like, up and, like, bah, just mm-hmm. coming around, and then all of a sudden, this fucking skull or whatever face pops up out of the sand, and it's like, holy shit, that's a movie. It's a mummy. There's a drive-in over there.
Amazing. Amazing.
This used to be a common American experience.
Yes.
All but gone now. No, drive-ins are alive and well. Believe me, I have to keep insisting on it. I drove by Toledo.
Yeah? You give a little toot-toot?
I was like, that's more of a place than I thought it was.
Toledo's a real city.
Yeah.
It's for real.
Yeah. yeah. It's big buildings and everything. Yeah. I was like, yeah.
Look
yeah.
at them flourish.
That's...
A character on MASH was from Toledo?
Right, and the actor was from Toledo.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, that was Last Breath. We're moving on. I just have to talk for a second about Dark City. Has anyone seen
God.
Dark City?
Yes, I've seen Dark City, Roger Ebert's favorite movie of 1998.
Roger
really?
Ebert
Really? We're
is
talking about that Dark City?
Yes.
He's so into it. There's, if you buy the Blu-ray, one yes, commentary is just Roger Ebert. That talking about how much he loves Dark City. The worst thing I could say about it is for the first 45 minutes, I was like, this is my new favorite movie. And for the next hour, yeah. I was like, it's not that
it
anymore.
Really, it is absolutely like that horse meme.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the, where the yeah. horse is drawn. It's one of those movies for sure.
Yeah.
I don't remember it. It's been so long since I've seen this movie.
But why isn't that? I want 25 more movies in this exact right. visual style, and there are none.
Yeah.
That, like, this is kind of like a late 90s CD-ROM yeah. game.
There's an alternate reality where Dark City is the Matrix.
Yeah.
And the Matrix isn't the Matrix.
It might be a little better. Calm down about the Matrix.
Ooh.
It might
oh, no, be. No, I'm not doing that game. Okay, Roger Ebert.
It might be like.
I'm not playing that game.
I don't know. I might put them on back to back one night and be like, where did you have more fun? Not which made you think about the fucking pills more. Which one of these movies did you have a better time watching? It's.
I don't know.
I'm very
a helicopter doesn't make ripples in a glass of a building as it blows up in Dark City.
I don't know. Oh, it's yeah. I would watch it again right
anyway,
now.
Anyway, I saw Dark City because it was Roger Ebert's favorite movie that year, and his previous favorite movie of the year was Eve's Bayou, which is like one of my favorite yeah. movies of all time. And so I was like, I now take your word as gospel. And then I was like, okay, that was good.
Brohaus was doing some sci-fi theme. So it was like dark sci-fi. I don't know what the theme was, okay. but they did one show only of Dark City on a night I had nothing to do.
Anyway, Underseen, if you've never seen it, it's definitely worth watching.
Oh, it's again, it gets worse, not better. Like, at the beginning, you're going to be like, oh my God, this is perfect. And then I was a little sleepy and I kept kind of half nodding and I don't know if that helped or hurt. It might have helped because it just made it more.
Anyway.
And the not the main bad guy, but the bad guy you see most of is Riff Raff from the Rocky Horror Picture. Oh, ugh. Roger Ebert does like it too much. I pulled out his, I have the like 4-star movies book and he's like, this reminds me of 2001 and Metropolis. Yep. And I'm like, okay.
I was going to say, I remember for sure him comparing it to Metropolis and me being like, okay, yeah, it's a city. It's dark. It's a dark city.
Finally, I mean, this is me talking about my own thing that was great, but I introduced 2001 at the Science Center on Saturday night, and boy, that movie on the biggest screen imaginable is like brain shaking. I don't know how to describe it. The first time I saw it, I was ever so slightly underwhelmed, only because it had been built up to me for my entire life.
I'm still surprised. Honestly, that's like one of those movies where I'm like, no matter how much you build it up, you when you watch it, go like, holy shit.
I definitely still did. But the first time I saw it, it was in a theater, but it was in kind of an older theater without great sound in the middle of the afternoon, you know, like not optimal conditions. This in a place where the sound shakes your teeth and it feels like I have to do that thing where I'm like positioning my head just right so the screen is within my glasses because there's so much.
Dazzling images
on a
huge silver screen.
It's like, oh, this. He's right. This is more than just the experience of seeing a movie. It's, I guess I'm saying, if you ever have the chance to see that on a gigantic screen, which they don't come around that often, we've passed the 50th. We're well past the 50th anniversary.
Do you know that movie invented juice boxes?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. It also invented tablets.
Amazing.
Tablet computers were conceived for them. I'm reading a book. I did not read the whole book before my introduction, which feels like a dereliction of duty, but also it's a 10-minute introduction. Yeah. Getting to page 100 was all I needed.
I'm pretty sure that you did your due diligence. Right. Yeah. Okay.
Does anybody have anything else?
Nope.
I watched Dolls from 1986. Sure. Let's not draw a movie. If you recall, despite it being March the 20th as we record this, Robin has already scored two bingos in this calendar year.
Because I grand slammed last week.
Yeah, which means she gets to pick a movie from our list. Take us through your process.
All right, so I think I cut this out of the episode, but I said, like, I already picked it when I got it. I looked up the movie that I had already picked, and it isn't available to rent on every platform, and even the ones is, it's kind of expensive, and so I moved along. By the way, that was A Few Good Men, because we have a segment, and the previous version of this podcast was called You Can't Handle the Truth, and Sean has never seen A Few Good Men.
I am shocked that it's not just on HBO.
I agree. That is that movie's role in life is to play once a day on TBS.
It's just here on USA Network.
But it isn't. So anyway.
It streams at the gas station. When you pump gas.
Right.
You
get... I was disappointed. Went through the list. Started pulling potential things to put in a shoe. And then eventually reached the point of, fuck it, let's do Titanic.
Oh,
so
shit.
We're doing Titanic.
Billy Zane.
Yes!
Billy Zane.
Because you recently said for our inevitable Titanic episode. Yeah. And I was like, we've got 1,400 movies on this list. It is not inevitable.
No, sometimes my brain thinks that, like, there's an extra
boost for every week it won.
That there's an extra ball in the tumbler for every week. But no, it's the Titanic is as likely as Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
Right.
So, yeah, we really should cover this.
So we're doing it.
Yay.
Where's it streaming?
Paramount Plus.
Okay.
Yep. All there and all of its plusy glory.
I gotta, do I VHS this and sit twice, watch it until
the two tapes.
It is a two taper. I also wanted to say that I had a moment of like, oh, well, maybe they'd rather spend $6 renting A Few Good Men than spend 3 hours and 15 minutes watching Titanic. You know what is less than 1 hour shorter than Titanic? A Few Good Men.
How long is A Few Good Men?
2 hours and 18 minutes.
Really?
I feel like
some nerve.
I feel like there was a time in history where we knew what movie could be long. Like Titanic, you can be long.
Right. Like,
yes. Yes. Right?
Yeah.
I'm cool with Killers of the Flower Moon. I'm cool with The Brutalist. Sometimes you have a story that takes that long to tell. Sometimes you need that epic scale. You know what doesn't? Courtroom drama.
I feel like Meet Joe Black broke that.
Ugh.
Meet Joe Black is like 240.
Gross.
Yeah, that was in two taper.
Yeah.
Pathetic.
Too much. It wasn't worth it. The peanut butter wasn't worth it.
I can't tell you the last time. David Warner's also in Titanic. David Warner.
Oh, he's the guy who slips the necklace in.
And gives Leo a couple cigarettes and tells him to go away.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
That was just, This is, we're in our, we need a David Warner space on every bingo card now. Yeah, I can't tell you the last time I like sat down and watched it, but.
Time to stop fucking around and watch Titanic.
It's definitely passed by it several times. I've seen it in chunks and, you know, like those things. Like, oh, it's like kind of a, you're switching channels and it's there. Stop for about 10 minutes and say, that's enough.
I did also want to say that I am looking forward to rewatching A Night to Remember from the 50s before rewatching Titanic to see exactly how much it rips it off, because I'm suspecting a lot.
I don't know if I'm committing to two movies.
Okay, fair enough.
Got a honeymoon coming up.
That's right.
So, Titanic.
All right.
The big one. Where does it land? No, it's still...
It's like... Probably top five still.
Top five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for a lot of our lives, the three people in this room, Titanic was the number one movie in America of all time. Yeah.
Before we get to that, Mr. Peabody and Sherman, remember when we did an episode about that? It was several minutes ago.
No, frankly.
Already forgotten.
Went to number one on March the 14th of 2014. What was the number one song in America?
Taylor Swift.
No.
Damn, I'm out. Ariana Grande.
Did she exist yet?
Yes, she sure did.
Okay, no.
T.I.
No.
Drake?
No.
Miley Cyrus.
Ooh, good guess. That's definitely her era.
I'm gonna make an obvious clue as difficult as possible.
Okay.
I'll bet, speaking of drive-in double features, that this song was heard on a double feature with Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
Okay, the song from the Lego movie?
No.
No, that's not what I meant. I meant the song from Despicable Me 2.
Which is?
Happy?
Yes.
There we go.
Wow.
By Pharrell Williams. Yes.
How did I forget that? That was like...
You just watched his film, too.
Yeah, that was very fucking apparent in everybody's lives for years.
It was...
That's a good song.
It was the number one
it
song.
Was of, it was
the
number it one, wasn't.
Number one song of the year.
Okay,
that
there you
was
go.
That was the Billboard, like, this did the whatever that means. And do you remember... When they rolled that out, there was a 24-hour music video.
Yes.
That was the big deal. This was supposed to be just a gimmick song. There was a 24-hour music video, and you could go to the website, and whatever time of day it was, it was like people walking down the street doing the dance and singing the song, and like once an hour, Pharrell would be there.
Yeah,
that's fun.
And there were a few other like little celebrity cameos sprinkled in.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's cute.
It's cute. It felt a lot like they were going, I don't think this is going to be a hit, so let's come up with something to jazz it up a little bit.
Right.
Well, it worked.
And then when it was a giant hit, they were like, we choreographed 700 people to try to make something, and they're listening to it anyway.